San Diego's political podcast number 5. This time we recorded at Polite Provisions. I keep calling this place Polite Perversions, but it's not. It's Polite Provisions. Place is very cool, very European vibe. Half expected James Joyce or Ernest Hemingway to come stumbling in. They make their own soda there. They make fancy craft cocktails. You know, I was worried it would be a little expensive because it kind of comes off as high-end, but you know, it was totally affordable. $5 to $9, $5 to $10 for a cocktail. And fancy soda, $2. That's what I had as I was driving. Lots of light, cool cafe tables. Very nice place, you know. Big windows. And then you hear that in here. You hear the people in the background. You hear the bus on the street. You hear people walking by. But that's part of what we're doing, why we're doing this. And the reason we do this is because we are out there with you. I met up with Dan Gillian. He's a San Diego lawyer. Mostly he does civil litigation. That means he sues people for stuff. So he's the guy, he's the kind of lawyer that the parents of all the suspended twerking students may hire. Remember them, the twerking students? They made that video at Script Ranch High School. 32 of them, three black kids, 28 white girls. All suspended for making a video where the white girls were shaking their butts and the black guys were rapping. It kind of seems a little ridiculous to me, but that's actually what happened. So they suspended 32 students. Now, what kind of liability is San Diego Unified School District looking at? Ooh, they could be sued. Will these kids not get into university? And then what does that mean? How do you monetize that? If you lose a lawsuit, do these kids lose out on scholarships now because they have to put they were suspended for sexual harassment? What does that mean? And then again, what are the lawyers' fees going to look like if San Diego Unified loses 32 different lawyers? How much is that going to cost? Is it really smart of them to keep fighting this? And why are they fighting it? So that's what we talked about. We talked about other stuff too. And I only talked about Facebook. Don't put pictures of yourself smoking pot on Facebook, especially if you're trying to get custody of your kids. I mean, that's just stupid. People do. They don't understand that the boundary between privacy and what's private and what's public and how that affects your life directly can affect your life. So, from Polite Provisions, 30th and Adams, very classy joint, lots of mustaches and vests. That should be their motto. Lots of mustaches and vests. And as always, if you have an opinion, you want to share it on the political podcast, call me, leave a message, and we may play it. 619-663-4531. 619-663-4531. Call, leave a message, ask a question. From Polite Provisions on the southwest corner of 30th and Adams. Political podcast from FullersDesk.com. Enjoy. We're here, Polite Perversion. People want to call it Polite Perversion. But then I'm like, how is a perversion polite? That doesn't make any sense.
It's a good setting for the topic, then.
Yeah, it's Polite Provisions. That's why you can't get, like,
it's polite here.
It is very polite.
I'm wearing a suit.
You're wearing a suit?
Tie.
Yeah.
On a Friday afternoon.
Very polite, but there's hipsters over there with long beards and trucker hats.
I don't see any.
Yeah. No, they've really dressed up this neighborhood.
Oh, I know.
A lot.
This is nice.
This used to be an absolute shithole.
It was.
It was all black, and they'd open at 4 a.m., and there was a line of people with their social security checks.
Oh, okay.
But they really dressed the place up.
Yeah, this is. Yeah. There's another bar right down the street, though, right? This is all beer, right?
Soda. This is like a proper, like, they make their own sodas, and then they do beer and, like, these, you know, craft cocktails at the high-end cocktails.
Like bacon or something, like bacon whatever, infusion.
Whatever the hell it is you want. I don't know. I mean, I've never been much of a cocktail guy.
No, yeah, they call them mixologists, right?
Yeah.
I represented one of those guys.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
For what?
It was a really interesting story. What happened? You ever hear that? It's an advertising. It's really clever advertising company, and there was a really cool little. They did little videos and like animation videos.
All right.
I forget. It's around here somewhere. I forgot who it was, but it was just a great little video that they did. Advertising like a credit card or something like that, and at one point they showed a bartender, and they took his photo, his actual face, his photo, and put it on this little like cutesy advertising thing for a credit card, and they just, and they were like, oh well, we just grabbed this photo from somewhere. And we're like, well, how is it that just happens to be a mixologist who's trying to start his own business as a mixologist, and he's on a our bartender's little cutie little, you know, he's a goofy looking. So they just, they actually paid like $10,000.
Well, yeah, you got to pay rate scale for that kind of thing, right?
I just told them to pay $10,000. They didn't.
Well, you know, there was like Folgers can guy. The guy that was on a Folgers can for like 2 decades. And it was just some guy, and they took this photo years ago and put it on the Folgers can 2 decades ago. And he finally found out that he was on this Folgers can. I guess he'd never seen it before. And then it was him as a young man.
Yeah, that's cool.
And he sued and won like $2-3 million.
Yeah.
Because they ended up paying the rate based on, I guess, whatever the deal was. But
oh, no, I just think it's... I've done it a couple times. It's just a civil code that says you use somebody's likeness for commercial gain. Yeah. You got to pay them.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Just how much?
Yeah. Yeah. So tell me, so this twerking thing, that's what's been, I guess it's still in the news, and everybody's kind of still talking about it. And they're still talking about it because the ACLU is involved now.
Yeah.
They suspend the kids, they tell them they can't, that now they have to put on their record that they are, they were suspended for sexual harassment.
Yeah. It's a big deal. I mean, think about someone who, is thinking of going to, you know, Columbia, or maybe they're on the line getting a scholarship.
Yeah.
And that makes a difference between them and a scholarship. It could be a huge deal. I know what they're saying. The principal's idea here is these students were given written disclosures. They were told in writing, and they signed an agreement that there were certain things they could and could not do. And, but, of course, it's just like everybody knows you can't commit sexual harassment. They're not going to look at this form in September when they signed and then, you know, towards the end of the school year say, oh, I'm violating that sexual harassment policy or that provision that was in some policy that I scribbled my name down last September.
Well, they're all minors, too, right? So can you make minors sign things and then that matters?
No, there's no, I mean, what?
Because I remember when I was a kid, this shows you how old I am. We used to get the Columbia Records CDs. You know, you get 100 for a penny, and you'd sign them when you were 13.
Yeah.
And then it was like, what are they doing going after?
Well, that's capacity. Okay. That's an issue. It's like he does not have, you know, is if you're under 18, you don't have capacity to do certain things. One, for example, is to sign a contract, or at least you can sign a contract.
Yeah.
But can someone enforce it against you?
Well,
So that's why if a kid's going to file a lawsuit, they got to get your mom or your aunt or whatever to be the guardian for them. But they can absolutely sign a form saying, I know the policy.
That these are the rules and they understand.
Yeah, and that's just evidence that I know the policy and I've looked at them and, I agree
but it's
to
not
be bound
like
by
it's
them.
It's not like a contract.
Yeah, they're not going to be enforcing it against them. They're not going to be suing for a breach of contract. They're just saying, listen, here's the rules and we want you to sign, acknowledge that you've read them, just like you. Like a ticket.
But the rules are no lewd dancing at dances.
Yeah.
And then don't sexually harass somebody.
Yeah.
So everybody wants to know this. What the ACLU says is, who's the victim? Who's being sexually harassed?
Well, I don't know if you remember this. I mean, see, almost 10 years ago. This is why, to me, this is just so bizarre. It was in 2005. Actually, it was in 2004, I think. When the event happened. But do you remember this girl? She was 15, and she was going to Torrey Pines High School. And she was just a knockout. Beautiful, gorgeous girl. Well, she someone convinces her to take her clothes off. Mm-hmm. And with another guy, he takes his clothes off. They go to an off-school site facility and take photographs of themselves nude. Now, they didn't. The photographs that eventually came out in a school-sponsored magazine... did not show her breasts, but you could tell that she was nude.
It was like her back or...
Yeah,
or
her hair.
The angle and all that.
Yeah, the hair was covering her breasts.
Yeah.
But it was clearly they were nude. And there was one that was really, really kind of... The one that bothered her the most was when there was a big box that would be covering their, you know, their private areas. Mm-hmm. Everything. And she was looking down at what it appeared to be, looking down at his private area. he's standing... He's sitting there bare-chested, and she's there nude.
And they're both 15.
Yeah, at that point he was 17. He actually went on to Columbia. That was the whole thing. That's why I use that. She was 15, turning 16. She was, I guess, a sophomore.
Yeah.
And he convinces her to take the clothes off. It's for a school-sponsored magazine. It was all condoned by an art teacher there at Torrey Pines. And this photograph, they publish it, and then 3,000 kids, I guess there's about 1,000 magazines that they published, handed them out to all these kids. These kids take these magazines home. The center spread looks like, you know, tabloid almost. And the parents freak out, not just my client's parents, because I represented that girl. But not my client's parents, but other parents. They were like, what the heck is this? What is a school magazine having new students in there?
Yeah.
So what was really the weirdest thing was it ends up on the local news, and my client's face ends up on news. And
So they showed her face in the magazine.
In the magazine, on the news.
What channel?
It was Channel 8. And they said, some parents are asking if this is kitty porn, and as soon as the word kitty porn was mentioned, her face shows up.
You know, and I can see some reporter thinking, oh, this is a great sweeps piece.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's going to watch this. All you got to say is teenage naked, teenage girl.
Well, there's Jay Jones over there. He ends up with it.
I mean, you know, you go for the lowest common denominator.
Inside Edition, everybody was calling for it at some point.
Yeah, it's that level.
But the thing is, at that point, the district, represented by Dan Shinoff, a very aggressive and good attorney that actually was a competition for me when I was at my first firm. We did the school defense work.
Oh, okay.
And he came in, and it was all my client's fault. The school had done nothing wrong whatsoever. There's freedom of expression, and there is. There's a freedom of expression. The education code actually says there's a thing as a freedom of expression, and we're going to guarantee that right to students, because not all students, I mean, people don't understand this, but kids don't have the same constitutional rights at school that all the rest of us do. I mean,
that's something that I don't think a lot of people understand in general.
Yeah.
Just to make a minor adjustment here, is that children don't have constitutional rights in the way that they think adults do.
Right. Like, for example, if your kid does something at school, say he steals something, and the principal doesn't know. He doesn't have probable cause to think it's in his pocket.
Yeah.
Your kid doesn't have the Fourth Amendment rights that we do. A cop can't come up to us and say, listen, I wonder if you stole something, and I'm going to put my hand in your pocket and check it out. They can't do that. In school, you can. So the Fourth Amendment's rights are not as strict. Now, you can't go in and arrest them and put them in handcuffs. I mean, that sort of thing. But there's all sorts of rights they don't have. That you would think they do. And one of them, though, is freedom of expression. That I was actually singled out by the education code. And so when I was pursuing the Torrey Pines High School and the San Dieguito Unified School District, they were screaming freedom of expression all day long, up and down, right?
Well,
and
I'm,
saying it
yeah,
was,
but that they probably thought that was their only line of defense, right?
Well, yeah.
I mean, you're only going to defend yourself, even though they know they're wrong.
Yeah, I know. I obviously, but at the same time, they were, you know, obviously adamant about it. But what I'm saying is, it seems like it's selective enforcement here. And then when the district has to get in and voice its what should be a voice of reason, it just comes down and says, well, we're not going to get involved, and we're going to allow one principal to use her definition of what loot is.
Yeah.
Because you know that saying in the law is, whatever, you know, I don't know what pornography is, but I know it when I see it, right?
Yeah.
Well, what is does a typical 15-year-old, 16-year-old, 17-year-old in today's age, they'd look at that and say it's lewd. And if they wouldn't say it's lewd, then how can they say they consented to any sort of penalties if they committed a lewd act, which I didn't think was lewd?
Yeah.
I mean, I look at it, I wouldn't want my daughter doing it,
yeah.
But I can also say that I think in today's today's standards, a kid would never look at that and say, oh, I'm violating a policy here. They just wouldn't do it, and that's ultimately what it comes down to.
Yeah, I mean, these were just a couple of, you know, typical obnoxious 17-year-old boys.
Yeah.
Decided they wanted to be rap stars for their senior year in high school.
But it's freedom of expression. And that's important. I mean,
you have that right as a kid.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm saying. The education code singled that out and said we are going to allow freedom of expression and we're going to protect it. And so there's some very good. Now you have to balance that against other rights.
Yeah.
I do not think that they would have freedom of expression to go out and actually sexually harass a kid. Like, if they're chasing some kid around and twerking at him,
well, that's a different, that's a different story, right?
Yeah. But yeah. See, they're really using a very, very strict standard of sexual harassment and lewdness here. And
but then,
the problem
then the school board comes out, and they go to the school board. There's a big school board meeting. All the parents go down, and I guess only one set of parents hired a lawyer, which kind of surprised me. I just, you know, as a journalist, I was expecting that to be a room full of lawyers, especially from Scripps Ranch.
Oh,
but one set of parents hired a lawyer, and they all went down there, and they all said, look, what are you doing? And then the school board said, basically, they said, yeah, this sucks, and we don't agree with it, but there's nothing we can do.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I mean, but this who's liable in that case? The school board, Yusinia Unified, still ends up being, if they lose, right?
Yeah.
They're the ones that foot the bill.
Yeah, of course.
Lose.
Of course. It's
and
any
so,
Unified.
Oh,
there's
it's
five
not
trustees,
a,
right? And, you know, and depends on what the trustees' agendas are. You know, every board's different. This one really didn't change much last time around. And the question you have to ask on any time a board is going to make a decision is, who do they care about?
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
I think that you could say in this particular board at this given time, what they care about is the teachers' union. So then you got to go back.
So but the principal, is the principal a member of the teachers' union?
No, she won't be. She won't be, but it's not so much, are they going to defend her or go side with her simply because she's a teacher? What you're going to look at is, what does the teachers' union think about this issue?
Yeah.
Now, if the teachers, I don't know, you know, I'm just speculating. I'm just kind of talking based upon other experience I've had.
Yeah.
But if, I would be surprised right now that if the teachers' union was really upset about these suspensions, that the school board would have a hands-off approach. That's my own suspicion. I think for whatever reason, because a lot of times the teachers, the people who have clout within the teachers' union, have their alliances with the administrators.
Right.
And it's just like any other political organization, except that I would say that schools are probably more political than anyone can ever imagine. Even though there's a lot of press on how politics or at play with the teachers' union and so forth, but it is so unbelievable political. I mean, if you in school, so there's going to be alliances there between among certain teachers within the teachers' union, and those could be alliances that are forged with administrators. This one, to me, doesn't make a whole lot of sense. To me, it's so borderline, it's so gray that I would think that any person who made their mind up on this one could be swayed by someone like a school board who was sitting there saying, listen, I just don't think this is right. And I can tell you, I would love to be representing one of the kids in this case that would not want to defend the district.
Yeah.
I think you lose on this one. The district loses 7 out of 10 times.
Yeah. So I don't understand then, why would they say, oh, we don't agree with it, but there's nothing we could do, even though it doesn't absolve them of any responsibility.
Yeah, well, they can only set policies. The trustees are there to set policies. They can't actually; they're not there to be administrators. So that's the difference. Now, so in other words, they're going to be involved in there, and they're going to be setting policies, and but they're not going to be there saying, checking certain acts of the administrators. Now, what my question should be is, what does the superintendent think? But I haven't.
Yet none of them are talking.
Yeah,
they're all issuing, you know, official statements and they're
not. Of course. But who the superintendent cares about? The superintendent cares about
getting
teachers,
reelected.
Teachers' union.
Yeah.
Well,
Who is it? What's his name? Koba, right?
Yeah. He got. So he's back, and then there's Scott Burnett or Barnett. Sheila Jackson, I think, was the only one.
She was there, like, interim for a while.
Yeah, but she's not there anymore. No. But I would say that
that was a big uproar when she got basically ousted.
Yeah.
You know,
she was
ousted.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of internal things at SDU that people, like you said, people just aren't, not just at their school, not just at the schools where their kids go, but at the school district.
Yeah.
They just don't. They're just not aware of all these background politics and why those things matter. And then something like what happened in Sweetwater comes out, where you've got, you know, all these massive construction deals.
Oh, yeah.
These guys have a lot of power, and they actually wield a lot of money within the kind of the business community. That's where they're really important, because of the contracts and all of the other the bids and things like that that go forward. And that's why you end up with Sweetwater School District.
I just,
you know, and it's almost like the secondary focus is education.
Of course, absolutely. That's what the unfortunate part is, because the amount of money that is just absolutely pumped into these school districts is just huge amounts of money. And you know, when there's a lot of money, it's going to be a lot of people seeking power. Especially in these school districts, it's all about power. Because, frankly, most people don't go into this business for the money. So a lot of times they have to get their perks through the power, through the political gains. And so, but I just think that this whole, I would hate to be defending the district on this one, because there are no victims of sexual harassment, and they cannot. I don't know how they're gonna say, listen, we're balancing two very important rights. One is the freedom of expression in an art group. This was an art group. Right?
Yeah,
I mean, this was what they were supposed to be doing. It wasn't like it was they broke into the school or they were there on a Saturday throwing a party.
Yeah.
This was part of their education. And now what are they going to say? Well, we got to balance. We have to recognize that. They're going to have to admit that they recognize this is freedom of expression.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're going to have to say, yeah, but this other issue, this other right of whoever, trumps that freedom of expression of the students. And I don't know what they're going to say.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're going to say. So then you look at, well, who's really getting harmed by this? And I would not be happy if I was a parent, and all of a sudden now I'm having to pay $30,000 or $40,000 a year because my kid just lost the scholarship.
Yeah, so is the school board going to put in some of these kids to college now because they lose their scholarship? What happens if they don't get in to the school that they were going to go to? If all of a sudden, like, say they were going to go to Duke or Stanford or Harvard, some big name school.
Well, now, it'd be a hard issue of proof, because, you know, how can you prove that you're going to make less money by going to, say, Berkeley?
Because that's what you got to prove,
Berkeley,
right?
Yeah,
you got to
yeah.
say, oh, my income was affected, and if I didn't go to Berkeley, now I make.
But I still think, you know, in all these cases, whatever the verdict amount would be, it's just the amount of attorney's fees they're going to have to spend defending these cases is going to be huge. Huge amount.
And then
they're
going to have to pay. The school district's going to have to pay for all the lawyer fees.
Yeah.
And that's before before any settlement.
Yeah.
That's not just like 30%.
Well, think about there's 30 lawsuits. Yeah. How much is that going to cost?
Like a nightmare.
Yeah. Now, it's crazy. And I just don't think that, you look at it, well, where's this thing going to be venued? I guess it would be venued downtown. I don't know what a downtown jury would do, but there's certain venues.
Does that even make a difference? I mean, they pool the jury from all over the county, right? Not just.
No, it does make a difference. I mean, we're very sensitive as to where cases get tried this town, but by and large, I'd rather have any San Diego jury than over an Orange County jury.
Oh, really?
But I'd rather have any Los Angeles jury over a San Diego. Well, because I do mostly plaintiff's work.
Yeah, okay.
So if I'm a defense attorney, I'd love Orange County or Baker's or Santa Barbara. They're very conservative juries up there. What's historically in town is the San Diego juries are considered to be the most liberal. It used to be South Bay, but we don't really get down there anymore in the civil courts. And then because of the budget crisis, Vista used to always be like, don't go there as a plaintiff's attorney. It's a great place to be a defense lawyer because they're so conservative, military,
idea. Yeah.
And East County is always a wild card. Like, you have no idea where you're going to get out there. You know, no idea. So
if you're doing civil stuff, you want San Diego.
Yeah.
You want the liberal-minded. Interesting.
Yeah.
It was funny. My dad always does criminal defense, so he just retired. And he said his favorite juror was black women.
Oh, yeah.
He loved black women on his jury. He's like, because once they decided what they wanted and once they knew something, it was like they were on your side. And that's the kind of person he looked for. And for him, that meant he loved black women.
As a defense lawyer, we always want what we wanted. A defense lawyer was a middle-aged business owner, or an engineer, And as a plaintiff's lawyer, you want the overqualified, like the PhD that decides he's going to work at McDonald's, the pizza delivery guy, something like that, where there might be this feeling. You know, these are all extremes.
Yeah,
of
course.
But this kind of feeling of. Victim, there's a victimization out there, and they're going to identify more with the person who's downtrodden, beaten down by the system. And that would be almost akin to the way the defense lawyers want.
Yeah,
essentially what we want. as plaintiff's attorney, as defense lawyer, you want a Democrat. And essentially, all boils down to is, you know, you want a Republican if you're a defense lawyer.
And you get more Democrats on juries in downtown.
No, you don't. Not in San Diego. That's what I'm saying. Okay. San Diego, by and large, you're going to get. And we don't ask.
Yeah,
there, you know.
Well, you can't. You get the pool, and then you kind of go through that system. You know? Yeah, it's not like you could choose.
No, you don't get to ask them what their
political.
Political.
You would if you could, though.
Yeah, well, you know what we do is we just go on Facebook right there.
Oh,
in the
really?
Courtroom. And a lot of times it'll if you see NRA there, you kind of have an idea. Yeah. But no, just go on Facebook.
Have you ever used Facebook as a way of getting a guy at the jury?
I've never used it to actually challenge, but every trial I go to. In a board year, I use Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Has anybody ever used Facebook to challenge?
I'm sure they have.
I wonder. You know,
like as a bait?
Like to keep someone off your jury, you pull up Facebook and you go, this guy.
You don't never tell anybody.
No. No.
Like,
no.
Did you find some dirt on there that says, you know, he's like a white supremacist and you're representing a black guy, then and you see down there that he's a white supremacist, you would go to the court at that point with that and show it to him. But what we typically do is we use that information along with all the other stuff for peremptories, which means peremptories. We don't have to explain why we're doing it.
Yeah. Well, you know what the E it stands for in like email and electronic is evidence, right?
I mean,
it's all there.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody.
Yeah.
You can't get a job these days without people Googling you and going to your Facebook page. And,
you know. There was a big news story 5 years ago when a DA up in Northern California used Facebook and he admitted to it. It was just like there's outrage you expressed. And I remember a reporter came to my office and asked me about it. I'm like, yeah, sure, no problem.
Why? I don't understand. Why would there be outrage because he used Facebook?
At the time, it wasn't, it was new. It's it may have not even been 5 years ago. But it was just outrage.
It just feels like forever.
Yeah, well,
it
seems like
I've had Facebook for my entire life.
Yeah. People were like, oh, wait, we have these prying eyes. It's private. I was like, no, it's not private. That's the whole point.
Yeah. Did you do that to your associates when you hire them?
No, I didn't, but I should. Especially for that guy.
Oh, yeah.
No, I know. I should. That's a client. I have a talk with every single client about that. What's on your Facebook? Because that's the first place that anybody goes to check somebody out. It used to be so different, man. We just we have to go and ask neighbors.
Wore out your shoes.
Ex-wives, ex-husbands are always great. You know,
not anymore.
They still
Google
are.
Google or Facebook, right?
Yeah, that's the best dirt you can get on anybody is their ex-husband or ex-wife. there's no doubt. But still, Facebook is a great, great place. I have a case against MTS, and it kind of reminds me. I have this other, but I have this case against MTS, and it's basically for a battery by an MTS employee. Hurt my client, and he's playing cop and all that.
Yeah.
Well, we go out and we just Google and we find a tweet where this same guy that hurt my client sends out a tweet about how a good way to get twisted up is to not do what a trolley cop says. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, unbelievable. So, obviously.
Like Twitter.
Yeah.
So now your kid.
Yeah, just.
So is your whole case like surrounding Twitter? Is that? I mean, that's where you start, though, right?
I just Googled him, and all this stuff came up. I did all my I'll sit down with every single.
I'm surprised people fucking do that. I mean, really. You're posting this stuff. I look at my nieces and nephews who are like 13, 14, and they're still not grasping consequence.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that stuff will follow them. And it's not like even juvenile records. Maybe people won't have as much access to that. They still exist when you're an adult.
They still
exist, but you don't get into that. It's not easy to have access to those records. But their Facebook pages, stuff they put on there when they were 10, 11, 12, 13, just being stupid kids.
Yeah, it doesn't go away.
It doesn't go away.
Yeah.
And it'll follow you until you're...
What we do is I have people I send it to, but you can buy these apps or whatever. Just go in and harvest every bit of information.
Why would you want to harvest?
Well, just because so they don't go in and delete it. So I just go in and I say, listen, I want you to harvest everything off so-and-so's Facebook page. That way, if they go and delete it, or I ask them about it at the deposition, they don't go and delete it.
Okay.
But yeah, it's
you have to actually. People are aware of this now, and would you tell a client to erase their Facebook?
I actually had a very, very actually stern talk with a client the other day where he was talking about. I looked to his Facebook, and he's talking about how he just smoked a bowl. And I'm like, and I go, listen, you can't. And he's like, listen, I'm a marijuana.
It's medical.
I'm a proud user of medical marijuana, and I am not going to be ashamed of that. I'm like, this has nothing to do with being ashamed. This has to do with this going to cost you and me money as soon as the defense attorney finds out about it.
Yeah.
That's what's going to happen. So make it private. And he did. But, yeah, it's just it happens all the time.
That's pretty amazing.
It's a good way of contacting people, too.
Of course.
Used to be, was it that way?
It's just, you know, I mean, I use it for my work all the time. When I'm looking for people or I want to find somebody, first thing I go to is Facebook. It seems obvious in a lot of ways. First thing you're going to go to is Facebook. And first thing you're going to do is Google someone and then look for them on Twitter. And then you start to go towards those more traditional ways. And then I start to look in the courts and all that stuff for what I can find. And then at the very end is the DMV, right?
Yeah,
like it used to be the DMV was up front. But
but
it's pretty amazing how much more dirt. And the people put it out there on themselves.
Yeah.
They're not, it's not like you're digging up something and interpreting dirt.
Yeah.
You know, they put dirt out there and it's, they're incriminating themselves and they just don't see, they don't.
I always wonder about that. It's like,
I don't understand.
Yeah, but you know, the thing is, I was just, the other day I was thinking about, and this issue comes up a whole lot, is, you know, your photograph right now, someone can take our photograph and they can post it up on the internet. And we can do nothing about it.
Well, yeah, we're in a public place, right? Where you could see us from the street. They could just stop right here by the window. Yeah.
Yeah. So we have no reasonable expectation of privacy. And so and now
But privacy was kind of a myth in the first place, right? I mean, right, it used to be, right, in the 50s, my uncle worked at the grocery store, and my dad worked at the liquor store, right, back when liquor stores and grocery stores were separate. He knew who every single drunk was in town and when they got drunk and what they drank.
Yeah, that's true.
And then my uncle, because he worked at the grocery store, he knew who was cheating on who because they were buying birth control. They were going out to, you know, he knew when they were buying.
Yeah, but the only way to get that information back then, though, was through word of mouth. And, you know, and there were penalties for being the gossip. Now it's like you just post a photo of someone doing something, and you're anonymous. And all these protections, by the way, I can take a private photograph, a very defamatory thing. In fact, I had a client and put it on a website somewhere where it says someone else is hosting the website, and they are absolutely protected under the law. I represent an actor, an up and coming actor out of Hollywood.
Wait. So that means that if I take a picture of somebody and post it on somebody else's
website,
a private photo of you, and then post it of you and post it on your associate's website here,
a hosted website,
that he's not liable,
right?
Who's
and what if you are?
But I'm responsible.
You are, but how do you find out if it's an anonymous one? A good example of that.
How would you even prove where that came from?
Well, I guess there are ways of doing it. I mean, there are
you look up IP numbers and things like that, I suppose.
That's how you do it. But a good example of it is the ripoff report. That's a huge one. That one is stories people's careers because for whatever reason, ripoff report has gotten a huge Google ranking. I don't know what it is. You know, it's like you put your name on somebody's name on the ripoff report. It's there and it's totally anonymous. And ripoff report will say, "Listen, the only way we're going to remove this is if you pay us $30,000."
Oh, geez.
You know, and we're going to come out and investigate you. And make sure.
So, if somebody posts a sex picture on Ripoff Report can essentially extort money.
Yeah, they do. Just go check it out, and they will basically tell you. They will talk about the past lawsuit. So and so just sued us, and we just won.
How much money are they making doing this?
I don't know, but it's got to be a ton. And there's been lots of class actions. Really, their class action attorneys have talked about going after not just Ripoff Report, but also Google, because they're saying there's some sort of connection that makes Ripoff Report rank higher than it should be. Because the thing is like, why is this person's name? Why is Ripoff Report popping up on the first page?
You think?
When
well,
the person
I mean,
would normally,
I mean,
would normally be the third, fourth, or fifth page.
Yeah, I mean, if I was Google, I would just say, oh well, they know, understand our algorithm better, and they're using the same system that everyone has access to.
That's what they were saying. But that was, But there's another. I mean, the law is the problem. And there's the senator. I think the senator, representative. Huckabee? Yeah, I don't know what if he's...
Huckabee. Senator Huckleberry.
Yeah. He got slammed. I think it was through Ripoff Reporters, one of these other websites, and totally defamed. And he was trying to change that law, but right now it hasn't been changed. I was telling you, I had this reps in this up-and-coming actor, really, really good-looking actor, with his, whose body was used a lot as a body double.
Yeah.
And someone got a hold of his picture, face right. and body, and posted it on a male, gay, I guess, sex site where male prostitutes would go and sell themselves.
Craigslist? You mean
Craigslist? It was like that. But effectively like that, yeah. And,
yeah.
And,
it's just, I mean, it's funny how you think about these things now, and it's not like even special. It's Craigslist.
Yeah,
it's where
yeah.
I go to sell my old Atari.
Yeah, yeah. It reminds me of another case. But he went there and said, listen, here's my website.
Yeah, yeah.
Here's my photograph. Obviously, I'm not selling myself.
Yeah, yeah.
Remove it. And they were basically pound sand. This guy's anonymous. It was a real hooker, a real
wow.
prostitute.
Yeah, using that guy's to...
And there's nothing he could do about it.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the kind of the world we live in. And I think those change.
But then you've got the other side of things where you want net neutrality, right? People want information. You want to be able to put information out there without... You know, you want
yeah.
to, that's the, kind of the point of the internet,
but that's what
right?
circles back to twerking. It's like, yeah, we don't want kids lewd dancing. We do want them to have freedom of expression. When do we balance? Let's find a victim first. Let's find someone who's harmed first by this lewdness before we start trampling over their freedom of expression. And that's what they missed here. So, but I, it's a different world, and I,
You went to Cal West, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, my brother
yeah.
went to Cal West.
Yeah. Oh, yeah? Mm-hmm. Yeah. They didn't teach him a lot of this.
They didn't? No, they didn't go over any of this.
Nah, they didn't teach anything about bounty hunters.
No.
You know about my bounty hunter thing, right?
No, you got a bounty hunter thing?
Oh, bounty hunters. Bounty hunting law is something, it's just the weirdest thing. Because
It just feels so Wild West.
It is.
I mean,
really,
is this
really
like a California thing? I know there's the, right, there's the... The bounty
yeah.
hunter thing, yeah. There's the 5 year you can, you know, squat it, the squatting, and that's totally a California thing.
No, that's...
If you go on the East Coast, right, it takes like 30 years to do the same.
Oh,
thing.
I don't know what the period is,
but it's very west of the Mississippi kind of mentality.
Well, that's true because that was actually the way they encouraged people to move west and forge west.
Was to give them land essentially.
Yeah, 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 they said, listen, if you go out there and you develop it. And no one else, and use it in an open and obvious way, and no one comes in and kicks you off, then it's yours.
Yeah, yeah.
So, California's...
Anyhow, your bounty hunter?
Oh, yeah, bounty hunter thing is Wild Wild West. That one, bounty hunters always cite this case back from 1873, a few weeks before Ulysses S. Grant was sworn into his second term as president. He this case came down and talked about how much power bounty hunters have. And these bounty hunters today, when they kick doors in of little 7-year-olds and terrorize little kids in the middle of the night, they'll come back and cite that case from 1873 saying, we basically are the master and anyone, you know, they're our puppet and we are able to do whatever we want. And the problem becomes is that no one teaches law enforcement what the rules are.
But they're not. I mean,
they're not.
Anybody can be a bounty hunter, right?
You have to. There's actually licensing and park requirements in California now. There didn't used to be, but they're private citizens. That's a point.
They're not law enforcement.
No, but so they are no. They're. I can go in if it's a felony. If I see someone commit a felony, I can. And I see him. Say I see someone runs up here and shoots you, and then he runs across the street and runs into a house. I can kick in the door and go after you and do a private citizen's arrest.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Because was there something I had probable cause? You're inside. It was a felony.
I feel safer knowing.
Yeah, yeah,
you
yeah. yeah. But I can tell you, I'm not. I will send.
You open your shirt there, remove your tie, and it's got a big D.
I'll be reasonable. I'll call 911. No, but see, what they do is they take these god awful, horrible positions. On the law, which is, well, theoretically, it was a felony because the guy that we were looking for, he was arrested but not charged for a felony, and we thought he was inside your house, so therefore we had a right to kick your door in. That's literally what they're saying.
So that's like no Fourth Amendment whatsoever.
Yeah, it's Fourth Amendment, yeah, it's Fourth Amendment violations.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You have no Fourth Amendment according to these guys, bounty hunters.
Yeah, I actually
do. Bounty hunters? I mean, do they need a warrant of some kind?
They would never get a warrant.
They can't get one. They're not law enforcement.
Right.
Only law enforcement. Get
right.
One, right.
But But the issue is the same thing for a warrant. A judge is not going to give you a warrant unless you have probable cause.
Yeah.
So a bounty hunter has to have probable cause to believe you're in there at the time, and yeah, but what it can is, only what be is, for a misdemeanor, and he can kick in the door. Wow. Oh, it has to be for, sorry, it has to be for a felony.
But what is probable cause mean?
Well, that's the thing, is there's that there, if you want to play in this area, you better know the law. The law is very clear about what probable cause is because of all the cases they have interpreted it.
Yeah.
So we know what probable cause, we have a definition, and then we have all these cases that will come out and say, this does not constitute probable cause. One example is...
Yeah, but by then, the door's already been kicked in, the
yeah, but
family's
then you sue
already
him.
Been... Yeah.
You sue him, you claim a violation.
And you're already in jail. That's right.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm just talking about in this case...
Like just the family or whoever was in the house at the time.
The ex-girlfriend.
The guy wasn't even there.
Yeah, no, he hasn't been there in years. But they thought... This is really what it came down to. They thought that if they could terrorize this girl by terrorizing her daughter, because they lived alone, a 25-year-old girl and her 7-year-old daughter, that they would give up where the guy was.
Oh my God.
That's what they were trying to do. It was like, it's kind of like the idea that should we torture a terrorist or someone who knows where the ticking time bomb is? Because it might not be so good to torture him, but we're going to save all these lives.
Yeah.
In their mind, they were willing to torture this little girl and her mom because they were trying to save $50,000. And you know what? The thing is, and what happens is, there's not a whole lot of attorneys out there like me that are willing to sue them. One reason I would think is because these people are such borderline criminals themselves. One guy that I'm suing right now, he was literally arrested and charged for conspiracy to commit murder of his partner in Las Vegas. He had pled guilty to assault with a deadly weapon, which was a felony in California. He comes out to California with a weapon. He shouldn't have one.
Yeah.
And he does the same thing I was saying before, all sorts of violations, and now he's threatening me and my family. And so there's lots of reasons why other attorneys would not want to pursue people like that.
Yeah.
They're going to go after the clean motor vehicle accident where there's an insurance policy.
These crazy guys that are...
And also the police themselves.
I mean, what does that mean when you get these guys that are all of a sudden they're threatening you?
Yeah.
You know, and they're threatening your family. How do you react? Do you tell a sheriff? Do you tell a police?
Well, yeah. No, I have resources. You know, I have a lot of my own security.
Yeah, I really
people. That, you know, immensely check them out, instantly put the authorities on the notice and stuff like that. I have that means. There's a lot of people that don't, but it doesn't make me feel a whole lot better. Because the same thing, if the guy decides to go crazy and do something, you know, by all means, come and do something, but when you're with my kids. So that's the stuff. But, I was taking on the Minutemen for a while there, back when the economy was really good, and so there was a lot of people crossing the border come up here and work. But then when I sued them, and I got this relatively gigantic verdict against the Minutemen for defaming some young woman in the ACLU.
Yeah.
And I would say, you know, and I would say that really hurt their reputation, but... Right around the, they kind of dwindled away because the economy went away and all the illegal immigrants went away. So, of course, they took credit for why all the, you know.
Even though it was the economy.
Yeah, yeah.
So what do you think about all this, you think the all this stuff politically that's going on with the IRS scandal?
Wow.
Do you think the Tea Party, just kind of made me think of that. Do you think the Tea Party is going to get a real resurgence? Because it seems like they're the ones that are really pushing...
There's a reason why the Tea Party went away. It's always those fringe guys, you know.
Yeah.
It's always the fringe. That was the same thing I did. They, you know, the Tea Party, they might have great ideals, but they'll get hijacked by the guys that are way on the right. And that's what happened to the Minutemen. The Minutemen's message in a very narrow context was, well, we're trying to enforce immigration laws. And you can't really argue with that. You know, you might be whatever, but...
Well, they saw immigration as like criminal laws and not and it's administrative. It's not criminal.
You know, you have to wonder why they're so feisty about that. You know, why aren't they up at the Canadian border versus the Mexican border? You can always
Well, you know, the wait, and this is totally sidetracked, the wait at the Canadian border I think today was 2 minutes, and the wait at San Ysidro was an hour and a half.
Yeah. Although Filner wants to change all that.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Oh, yeah. He wants. Well, how else is he going to get the Olympics in?
Right. He's interesting. Yeah. But I think he's got some points.
He's my favorite. He's my favorite mayor so far. Sanders was a nice guy, and I'm sure he'd be pleasant to have as a neighbor. But Filner, as far as mayors go, has been the most fun.
I got some shit the other day. I went to a fundraiser for Filner. He's trying to pay off his debt.
Yeah.
And he was talking about, he was talking about things that really, really firing up a lot of emotions, like the hotel, tax. They don't want to call it a tax.
But it's a tax.
Yeah. I made a comment today. I took a photograph with him, posted it on Facebook, and made a comment about, he actually had some good points. He seemed like he genuinely cared. And I got a lot of people coming in.
He's a true believer. He believes in what he's doing. It's not like he doesn't believe and is insincere.
He has reasonable points. He was saying,
People just don't like the manner that he does it. It's like he's got the same problem that Mike and Gary has.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, as a newsman, I would love to have Mike and Gary in the city attorney's office instead of Jan Goldsmith. Yeah, because Jan's so polite and quiet.
Yeah.
He's used to that old. But Mike would be out there. They would be in fistfights. That would be great TV.
No, that would be Gary versus Filner.
Because it doesn't matter if they're both Democrats. It doesn't matter if they both agree on most. They would both. They're the kind of people that find things to fight about.
Yeah, I like Mike personally.
Yeah, yeah.
I worked with his brother Gary. They're both genius level guys.
Yeah, so my dad went to law school with Gary.
Oh, really?
My dad did a couple of campaigns before Mike finally won.
Okay.
I remember Mike ran and was debating one guy, and I think it was one of his first runs for city attorney, and they were in a debate, and he called the guy an asshole. he lost his temper and called him an asshole.
Yeah, yeah.
And then that was it. It was like a midterm election.
What other word do you use for asshole, really?
I mean, there's no... I don't understand. It's a specific word. It means something.
I know. It really does. I mean, I mean, jerk, I guess, right? Yeah, but it doesn't quite get it.
No, it doesn't. Yeah. Yeah, so...
I don't even know where we were on, but... Yeah. It all comes back to, I think, especially with Michael and, and Filner, is like there. It's a constant, the balancing of things, and that's what a lot of people don't understand about the law, and what we're lawyers ever happen to constantly do with vagaries and balancing things, factors.
The thing is too, it's like they get the same thing with doctors in a lot of ways, right? Doctors treat their patients in a way because they need to kind of look at them in an objective fashion.
Yeah.
And lawyers need to look at their clients in an objective fashion.
Oh, yeah. And, but the law itself.
It's a different process.
Medicine is pretty... They like to have it clear-cut, right?
I don't know if it is, man. Sometimes I feel like it's pretty... I'm just guessing half the time anyhow. I don't think it's as clear-cut as I would like it to be.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I agree with that.
But
it is science.
It is science.
And ours is not. Ours is dealing with day in, day out.
What is it? It's applied philosophy.
Yeah, right. And that's why people don't trust lawyers, because we're so able to spin the facts in our favor. And the reason we do that is because we're constantly, we look at a set of facts and we can twist it.
So then how come so many lawyers get elected to office?
Well, because a law school does,
It turns out people want to be politicians.
Yeah, but you know what? I think the reason is because law school, probably more than anything else, is probably the best education you can get out there. As far as, if you go through law school and you're finished with law school and you've got a good, solid undergraduate degree, the education you have, both in speaking, communication, writing, reading, and analyzing things, and presenting things, is a really, really rounded education. Whereas if you go and specialize, say, in something like literature, you might be a fantastic writer that some people would like to read, but you're not going to have the sort of education that's going to get you in all doors. So we're kind of, I can go into really any setting with a law degree and have a basis to communicate with them. You put a PhD that's in, literature or political science, you put them with somebody else, and they're not going to have a whole lot to talk about, not a whole lot of shared education. Whereas in law school, I'm learning everything all the time about other areas. Like, I never knew I would be an expert in bounty hunters, but now I am. I didn't.
Well, see, journalism is kind of the same way,
right? Exactly.
Right?
Very much that way.
It's very 2 inches deep and 10 miles
wide.
In
some ways, it's much better journalism because you're doing it repeatedly over and over and over, and the time constraints you have. Whereas, you know, you have to do it every single day. And also, I was thinking about this actually, this very issue the other day, and how journalists are required to think very, in a very creative way. They're always trying to find an angle that the next guy hadn't, right? Okay, you got to have the basics there to make yourself, but then to get the angle, you know, you got to think of something. It's like, you know, well, what happened today in Jodi Arias? Well, everyone's talking about this. Look, I want to talk about this idea, and it's got to be something that people are going to be interested in. That
you want to set yourself apart from the crowd.
Yeah, but it takes a lot of mental effort to do that, right? Mm-hmm. You can spend a lot of time chasing down some rabbit hole, and as a journalist, you don't have that time, whereas an attorney, I can do it and be like, I guess not. Never mind.
I'm just going to continue.
You guys missed a deadline.
Yeah.
You know, so that would be the difference.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I don't know about that. I mean, I think that's definitely the best vision of what a lot of it is.
Yeah, yeah.
That's ideal. I mean,
no, exactly.
You know, I mean, but I don't know. Well, look at that. It's almost an hour.
Oh, cool.
See? That flew by.
Yeah.
And you got to cuss. You can say fuck shit on these things because I have to earn that explicit mark. All of my things have, even though they're not, they're really dry topics. But that way, I don't get in trouble from Apple. You want to have that explicit, just that one little explicit label.
I think I just use asshole.
It's fine. Well, yeah, but you were trying to describe it within the context. I mean, one of these days you'll have to put that into a contract somewhere. There's just no other word that describes this asshole as asshole.